Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I'm David J. Lohr, and I am joined, as usual, by the chief TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello, Tim.
Hey, David. How's it going?
Going pretty good.
Excellent.
It's been a busy Valentine's week for TV.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for sitting in, by the way.
Oh, certainly. Certainly, anytime.
Going to the bullpen.
That's right. Well, you know, Jason's off at a Doctor Who convention, so, you know.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, Jason.
He's at Gallifrey 1 in Los Angeles.
I didn't know he was nerding out that bad. Okay.
It's a pretty safe bet.
Wow. Okay.
But
all
it is,
right.
It's TV related. It counts. It's okay.
Well, I'm guilty for missing his, misreading his email about when he was available. And then, waking up on Thursday and he's like, I'm gone. Bye. I'm on the plane. Didn't know he was going to the Doctor Who, getting in the TARDIS and going over there. Okay, Jason.
So, yeah, I got the call and I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing anything. I'm food shopping. Yeah, I can do it. It's fine.
And we can do it. Always time to talk TV.
Oh, yeah. God, yes. So what TV do we want to talk this week? You've got a couple of reviews coming up or just out.
Mm-hmm. The latest is Humans. That was right, Monday, came right out.
So that's season two or series two?
Yeah, or the Brits say series two, season two of Humans. I actually think I really loved it. I mean, I think it's early yet.
Right.
I think I was... I don't know. I have to go back and look at the two 2015 lists because it came out in the summer of 2015. I would have to go back and see where everybody else did. I was definitely an early adopter on Humans. I really loved it. I thought that they were doing fantastic work that was going under the rainbow. It was under the rainbow. Actually,
well, that too.
And the radar. Two things. but. I thought they did great work. It was in the summer. We were all kind of feeling the crush of peak TV, but not knowing that it was going to get a whole hell of a lot worse in 2016. So, you know, here we come in season two in 2017. And I just think, it's at a really good place because it doesn't have the doubt, David, that it might've had in the first season about like whether it's going to be able to continue.
Right.
I think there's always that indecision in British TV series about whether, well, maybe we'll make another one. And so just kind of leave it up in the air. And so they left it vague enough and they had enough conclusions. I think it felt like it was comfortable enough closure for viewers if it didn't come back, it would be fine. More importantly, they were able to milk this strand of it that was going to kick off season two. And I think now that they have done that, I think that, you know, it can go as long as they kind of want it to go. And I would hope, I know the Brits don't like to do a lot of like long running, series, but I would love, three or four seasons of this. I think it's great. I think the new synths that they brought in are interesting. I think the twist is interesting. And as I said in my review, it's not just... it's a difficult genre to tackle because everybody is, it's usually us against them. Are these artificial intelligence / robots going to get be sentient? Are they going to, come to life? It's the Westworld thing all over again. And of course, Humans beat Westworld to the punch on this, although it's an age old premise. And eventually season two is trying to get to that point. Like what happens when they're starting to be human in some way? But as I said in my review, what's good about this series, it's never us against them. It's never the end point, rushing to the end point of asking the question, what if they gain consciousness? What if they become sentient? That's this show along the way, they're like, let's hit all the human emotions, no pun intended. Let's do all of that before we get to the bit, so that when we lay this out as a character-driven drama, when we finally get to this idea of a consciousness and what that might mean, then everybody's invested because they know the characters and there's a human element to it, if you know what I mean.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, we did an episode on the main show somewhere, I think it may have still been while it was running, And it was both, we did both humans and the movie Ex Machina, which is similarly themed. And I think we generally liked humans, as I recall. I mean, I enjoyed it by the end of it. So I'm really looking forward to this season.
Well, I think it really sort of picks up and broadens out, and that I think is directly related to the fact that it has a life and it can go more episodes. I loved it. I thought the acting is really great and the writing is really underappreciated. And I think that these guys, I was big fans of theirs in the first season because I think they were taking a sort of a well-worn genre and breathing new life into it in really subtle ways. They just didn't rush and they just looked at the human side of things. And they have some even more clever experiences in season two. So I would tell people to go get on that right away. I think you can watch the first season on Amazon if you haven't seen it already. Yeah, and then catch up on this one through AMC.
Excellent. So we should look out for humans. Do you have any other reviews coming up that you want to talk about?
Well, I have the one that I'm working on right now, which should be posted. Hopefully, you know, it might be posted by the time we're finished this worldwide simultaneous release of this podcast. But if not, probably shortly after, and then we can link to it.
Okay.
And that's probably the one we should shine the light on. Although God, here we are in this world of so much riches, I wouldn't want to overlook humans either. But Planet Earth 2. Which was delayed from its January 28th American premiere, and it's going to start Saturday. So February 18th, it starts. The first episode, there's six episodes. The first episode you can see on not only on BBC America at 9, but also on AMC and Sundance. And then the next five episodes are every Saturday on BBC America at 9. And this is, you know, I hate to say it's almost like required viewing. I feel like I want to be a teacher or a parent and say, okay, everybody, settle down, turn your Netflix off, right? Put your Amazon toys down. Let's disconnect the Acorn for a second, and let's put down all the FXs and the HBOs and Showtimes, and let's just sit down for a second and watch this. Because it's, you know, it's not an eat your vegetables type moment, but it's really a TV event that's I'll say this, I had a difficult time writing about it because it's basically just saying, oh my God, this is so great, over and over again.
Wow.
And you don't want to ruin the sort of the animal surprises or whatever, but you also just it's not plot driven, obviously. These are animals, there are scenes that you can point out, but from a review standpoint, the difficulty of it is basically the emotion that you're trying to extend to readers, and in this case listeners, is that you're going to be so amazed when you watch it. Like you'll be so happy that you did turn it on, because you're going to experience this, you know, here we are in 2017 and there's all magic and nuance everywhere and genius on all these channels, but so it seems hard to like overstate like how great this is. Like you watch it and you're thinking, okay, they took 3 years to do this, it's been a decade since the original Planet Earth. They took 3 years. They shot in 40 countries, countless hours of film. And they've got this, I mean, the lengths that they've gone. As I was writing this, I went back to look, because the press copy actually has a making of, which I was hoping I could find, whether it would, because you could pre-order Planet Earth Blu-ray on Amazon. It's not going to be out until like March 28th or something, but I was hoping that they would have that little hour-long documentary, mini documentary in there about the making of, because it really tells you how amazing the footage is. Like there is, David, I'll tell you just for one thing, there's a hawk that's flying around these trees. And I kept thinking to myself, I've seen a lot of television. I've seen a lot of ways to shoot something. And I kept thinking, how are they doing this? Like, is there a camera on this hawk's back? Like, does this bird have a little mini, like, how would it fly with this camera on it? Because it was like literally when the thing was turning around, it felt like the camera was like right on the back of its neck, and you could see its face and its beak. And at the same time, this rush of trees flying by in HD at like, looks like 100 miles an hour.
God.
And I was like, how the hell are they doing this? And, You know, and so in a lot of the ways they were able to, like, one of those ways they had paragliders. So guys who are professional paragliders, and there's one who does it in the mountains as they're chasing this one bird that's dropping at, oh, I don't know, the speed is like unbelievable. And so this guy is like flying on the paraglider. He's got a special camera mounted ultra HD thing on his head. And he's getting his chasing these birds and getting as close as he can. And then they can zoom in.
God.
Yeah. It's like the technical ability is amazing. And in the, And they go by little regions. Like, so the first one's islands, second episode's mountains, and they end in episode six, David, on this thing. They end in cities. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I think cities might be for my money, I think they should have started – and I point this out. My one little critique in the review is that I think they should have started with mountains the second episode because it's – I think – not to take anything away from the first one, Islands, but it's exponentially more interesting the second one. So keep that in mind as you walk. But it ends on cities, and they used it kind of blows you away to think like what they were able to do. So for example, they're in India, and there's these langur monkeys, and they're all over the rooftops. So in the daytime, I started laughing because it felt like a 1970s cop series where you're on the rooftop and you're chasing the bad guy across the rooftop, right? Like it's every cop show in the whole world's done that.
Right.
But in this case, you are in broad daylight and you're in India and you have cameras all over this part of the city and these gigantic langur monkeys are chasing each other and fighting on your rooftops and over your laundry and over your house.
Oh my God.
And they have so many cameras set up that like they're following this. I'm not even kidding you. This alpha monkey is trying to chase off this gang of like 12 other monkeys and they're following him. And I still honestly don't know how they did this. They're following him over a rooftop. It's like an action sequence over a rooftop and down onto somebody's balcony and then leaping off the balcony bars onto another roof. And I don't know how they did it, but they chased it. And then they show a wide shot of like all these monkeys. And then there's people hanging out like on their stoops, like, oh yeah, there goes the monkeys in broad daylight biting each other and blood everywhere. So there's that. But I have to tell you that just to get people pumped for this thing because it's really pretty impressive. The sixth episode when they do the cities part, they have oh my God, it's gonna blow you away if you see it. They because there's other stuff, there's other beautiful stuff everywhere else. But when you see they get to Mumbai and they use infrared and light sensitive cameras and they track leopards. So they're infrared and thermal cameras.
Wow.
It looks like you're thinking, oh, this can't be real. These people are all lit up. It looks like animation almost,
right.
But it's not, it's all real. And so they have these infrared and thermal cameras and they're tracking leopards roaming Mumbai at night and like real leopards. And there's a lot of them. And like to the right, you almost think, did they edit this? But they didn't. There's like six males, guys, walking around this like lake area or whatever in Mumbai, and unbeknownst to them, like really close to them, are these leopards, and they're illuminated through this thermal technology, these cameras, and I was just like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. I kept seeing that over and again, saying that over and over again. I can't believe I'm seeing this, It's just unreal. And then they show them attack these pigs that are all over Mumbai. And they snatch up these pigs and the pigs chase them off. And it's and meanwhile, as these feral pigs are chasing this leopard, he leaps over this railing and onto this walkway. And the camera pulls back and those like six dudes are illuminated like very close to where the leopard came up. And I was like, okay, note to self, don't walk by yourself at Mumbai if you ever visit. So It's just stuff like that, David. People are going to be blown away. And that's just the colors and the cinematography. They can get – there's an ultra HD, and they're getting these amazing shots, stuff. And they were able to capture things, you know, looking through the press notes. They were able to capture some instances where they just didn't think they were going to be able to get it.
Right.
They were hoping for one thing, and then their wildest dream came true. They have like two or three instances of that in these 6 hours. And I mean, all of it's spectacular, but when you see the part where they didn't think they were going to get it, you're going to be like, wow, okay. So I won't give it away, but one of them is a locust swarm. It's just amazing. So that's the one people should watch. That starts on Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was sold when they announced it, 'cause I loved the first one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up watching, you know, David Attenborough series and everything. And I've, mm-hmm. you know, I've just been blown away by what they're able to do now compared mm-hmm. to, you know, all the things that I watched over the years growing up. So, yeah, I've been looking forward to this. And especially compared to, I forget the name of it, but it's whatever they're doing on PBS right now, where it's like they have fake animals.
Yeah.
With cameras, mm-hmm. and they're trying to get, you know, it's like, here we see the animals befriending the robot animals. And the 15-year-old and I were sitting there watching the preview for it the other night, and we're like, nope.
No, it's actually pretty good. I like
really?
It.
Really? Yes, okay, okay. I will give it a chance. I mean, it looks ridiculous. But...
It does. It looks ridiculous. But it's a nature special. It's not as good as this, obviously. But it's actually pretty good. It's my foray into the nature world. People really think I've lost my mind. But yeah, I was with you. I was like, that's a robot. That's a monkey with a camera in its eye. But you know what? It's actually pretty cool.
All right,
but as far as the scale and the scope of this, it's not, I mean, nothing close to planet Earth.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's good.
So what's on the horizon? What else is going on?
Well, really the last thing that I've got, you know, so humans, people can catch up on. We got Planet Earth on Saturday. And really the last thing I've got as I go into next week is just a reminder. Well, you know, I'm going to tell people not to watch it, and they're going to watch it. And certain segments going to say, oh, it was fantastic. But because I might be the outlier, but I've really hated Big Little Lies. On HBO, that starts this Sunday. It's got a huge cast. I mean, it's every person. And Jason and I talked about this last week, but it's a reminder that Big Little Lies starts on Sunday, and I think you can save 7 hours by not watching it.
I've been saving a lot of hours by not watching some HBO recently.
Yeah, there's that.
Speaking of which,
speaking
of shows we don't watch, I think this was your idea, so I'll let you throw it out there.
All right. Well, it's yeah, and I'm curious to see what you came up with because, you know, yeah, obviously I'm paid to watch this, and it's still a struggle for me to get through all this, you know, and I hear constantly from people like, tell me what to watch or whatever. I'll send them a link of all the things from 2015 and 2016 that made my list, but – you know, there's just so much other stuff. Like I'm always telling people, are you watching Legion? Because you really need to catch up quickly. Stuff like that. But there's so many shows, and I understand people's predicaments where they're like, okay, well, what – I don't even know – like their heads are spinning. Like, where do I start?
Right.
And so for me, I thought, okay, when I have a chance to catch up on things that I haven't watched, let's say maybe Dan Feinberg has reviewed it and I haven't got to it yet – you know, where do I start? And there's tons of these. You know, I haven't watched the OA. I know people have watched that on Netflix. I haven't watched it. And I keep thinking like, well, that's one. Should I start that? And there's a number of these for a television critic who's pretty much watched everything. So people out there who are not TV critics, I'm sure are drowning in things. And so the one that caught my eye was like, I thought, you know what? I'm going to give Billions another chance and for sure on Showtime. And then I started thinking about it and I said, but am I really? I when I came down to it, I was fiddling with the remote and like that, am I really going to go back and watch part of season one so that I can get to season two of Billions? Cause I didn't like it when I watched it.
Right.
And I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. So I'm trying to think like how many, and I'll read some of Dan's reviews and then you see feedback from other people and you just forget to find people that you respect and you say, well, they were kind of lukewarm on this. So I don't know if I'm going to watch it, but there's other ones like I want to watch A Series of Unfortunate Events on right. Netflix that got good reviews. You know, I want to be able to tell people that they can go out and do that. So I want to see that. So that's one I'll start. Billions is one I won't. You know, there's like I saw a thing that Love is going into its second season on Netflix, and I'm like, I didn't even watch the first season, and I heard it wasn't that good.
So
there's a series of shows like that where you kind, especially on Netflix, which turns out a show a day, basically, you start thinking, should I watch that? Should I start it? And there's got to be something, is what I'm thinking, David. I guess it's the kernel of an idea here. There has to be something really compelling to like make people want to get in there and watch it. Right. So I didn't do Billions, but I'm curious as to shows that you're thinking about starting or maybe not starting.
Well, Billions would be one of those for me where I keep thinking, you know, I like the actors. I'm intrigued. And then I see clips from it and I go, no, I'm really not. you know, and I mean, I remember the reaction to season one. And now this week, you know, all of the various actors have been on the different late night shows. And I think it was a clip the other night on Colbert where it was Damian Lewis and Maggie Siff, and Damian Lewis doing his gruff New York billionaire accent. And I mean, he does a pretty good American accent. I will give him that. This is not that one. But, you know, it's just hearing him with that voice. And I'm like, I can't sit through that. I can't sit through that at all. And then listening to the interview with Colbert talking about, you know, the opening scene of episode one, season one, is this dominatrix scene. And of course it's funny because Paul Giamatti fell asleep while they were shooting it, you know, whatever. And talking about, you know, oh, well, he's a national treasure and I didn't want to hurt him. And, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, she's right. I love Paul Giamatti. I don't want to see this. And, you know, maybe the dominatrix thing was the hook to pull you in. I don't know. I just, everything I've seen from it looks ridiculous. So yeah, I won't be starting that. I keep, every time I turn on the Apple TV, up pops Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, yes, I'm with you on that one. Zero, and, I totally join you in the not wanting to watch it.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm not interested in zombie undead stuff anyway. And then I watched the preview of it and I said, this thinks it's a comedy. It thinks it's funny. And it just, I don't know. I'm like, no. So I'm not bothering with that. And speaking of Netflix, I have to say The Crown. I respect The Crown. I don't want to see The Crown.
Okay. Now The Crown is one I want to see. So tell me what's not compelling or pressing your compelling button.
I just don't care. It's as simple as that. I just don't care.
Interesting.
I'm sure it's beautiful. I'm sure it's well done. I'm sure Matt Smith is brilliant because I like Matt Smith. There are so many more other stories that I'm interested in reading or seeing, and this is not one of them. It's like I can read a paragraph in an encyclopedia and I'm good. Right? You know, I don't know. And anything Ryan Murphy, I cannot. Because I was thinking, it's like, well, The People versus OJ, which again, well made, I guess, great acting, won all the awards. I just don't care. But then it was like, as I'm thinking about it, I'm going, well, actually, I've never liked any Ryan Murphy stuff. So yeah, I'll just make it a blanket thing.
Okay. All right. Well, I follow that. Well, look, that's legit. I do. The whole point is to hear people's reactions and what makes their choices of opting in and opting out. And I'm with you on Ryan, but I did really like People versus OJ.
Yeah. Well, I think probably that had the balance of the scriptwriters whose names escape me because they're very.
Yeah.
What is it? Larry Karaszewski.
Oh, it would.
And
yeah.
Scott Alexander.
Yeah. Yeah, it escapes me as well.
They do really good biographical movies, so I'm sure this is probably the best thing of all of those things because they were counterbalancing. But yeah, I don't want to see that story. I lived through it. I saw it. But you know, glad they made it. I'm glad people liked it. I don't think it's a bad thing. It wasn't for me. But yeah, let's see what else. I have to say, and we did get a listener question about this, because even though you guys talked about it and you had your review, the question was, I want to hear what David thinks about it. Legion,
mm-hmm.
which I am curious, mm-hmm. but there's also the part of my brain that's like, I have a limited amount of room for Marvel superhero projects, and I'm kind of at that point. It's like, mm-hmm. There are other things I want to see. And I like Noah Hawley, so I trust that it'll be at least decent. But I don't know. Do I want to watch Legion?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that was easy.
Yes.
I will watch Legion.
Well, I think your impetus for a lot of these are they're on point. I'm with you. I also have, and I'm not even like a Marvel woman / DC / comic geek on these same fronts. I'm exhausted by what's out there, and I'm underwhelmed right. by a lot of it. So, in my storytelling choices, I would probably, like you, being a theater guy, at some point you're like, well, that's great. Let me branch out to something that's not, doesn't have a suit. Somebody that's not wearing a superhero suit. But I found this one to be just amazing, especially visually, but the writing is fantastic. Okay. The nuances are pretty amazing. I think you're going to like that, but I see where you're going, because I have the same beats on stuff like Ryan and Murphy and like you said about Marvel, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, that was sort of like, do I mention it? Well, I'll mention it because we've talked about it already. So it was like, yeah, it was, you know, but yeah, that was the only one that's iffy on my list. It was like, yeah, mm-hmm. I kind of can see watching it. Speaking of theater, Superior Donuts, which is based on a brilliant play by Tracy Letts, who had nothing to do with the show. It reminds me of, and I barely remember this because I was like 5, 6, but they turned Lanford Wilson's The Hot L Baltimore into a sitcom, a Norman Lear
yes.
sitcom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's fine for what it is, but it is not the Lanford Wilson play. This is very much the same kind of thing. And I'm just like, I mean, I can picture making a sitcom out of that show.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that this is the sitcom, right? It's like this, it's just, it seems too jokey and familiar to me. And maybe if it survives, they can calibrate and adjust. I mean, the first season of Parks and Recreation, a show that I love, I cannot watch the first season of it because they didn't have it balanced yet.
Right.
So, you know, I might revisit this one if it survives,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if it'll survive.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that one either. So I'm with you on that. That's a no for me. I join you.
And the maybe the last one that is just absolutely not interested in is The Young Pope.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I watched a little bit of it. I don't mm-hmm. need to see the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, son of a theologian, intrigued mm-hmm. by the idea of an American Pope story, have thought about writing one myself. definitely not this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I mean, it's House of Cards in the Vatican, but you want it to be better than mm-hmm. that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit, I like the still image of Jude Law and the kangaroo standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think yeah. I tweeted that out as True Detective Season 3. I would watch that.
Yeah, I Young Pope I like. And I've continued to like. I can't say that it's you know, I've said this about other shows like Treme and Boardwalk Empire shows that I've, well, those also just happen to be on HBO. I don't mean to indict HBO, but I never found any of those compelling. I thought they were great, and they I'm sure I think are probably going to end up being considered greater than The Young Pope, but I didn't find them compelling. I actually like what's going on in The Young Pope. When I'm watching it, I'm like, okay, this is an interesting choice, or why are we going in this direction, or sometimes why are we still on this idea?
Right.
But I'll watch it and I'm intrigued by it. But I get what you're saying, especially if you've watched some of it and then you bailed out. I think that's probably true of others. I'm wondering simultaneously, because the one I'm kind of struggling to catch up on, whether you even had an idea or an inkling, I should say, of wanting to watch Taboo on FX.
I am. That's at the bottom of my list with a question mark, because I have been watching it.
Mm-hmm.
We actually talked about it the last time I was on.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, we did.
Yeah.
That was before I think I had my full review out. Yeah,
that's right. And I have stuck with it because a dear friend of mine from, 30 plus years is watching it and is fascinated by it and wants to see what I think of it. So I'm like, okay, I will watch this for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I mean, compared to The Young Pope, I mean, because I've done a lot of reading and research and just been steeped in Catholic childhood, that's kind of a world I'm familiar with. So mm-hmm. it doesn't hold the same kind of allure for me. Whereas the backstory to Taboo is a world I have no familiarity with. So it's
right.
really interesting to watch just on that level.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that is for some other people, their opt-out moment. Like, it's very British.
Right.
In its setting and its subject matter and its moving parts. And it's a period piece, which some people have a really difficult time getting into. But yeah, I'm going to keep up on it, but I have to say there's probably now more episodes stacked up on my DVR than I have actually seen.
So, oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like I keep thinking about shows that I sort of put off and then I came back to later. Like You're the Worst. You're the Worst mm-hmm. is a show that in the beginning I was like, I don't need to see that. And then after a few weeks, Jason wouldn't shut up about it. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a chance. And yeah, that's on my list now. I watch that. He was right. And I'm trying to think of some other shows like that. Well, Parks and Recreation would be one where I came back near the end of the second season because I'd watched the beginning and went, nope.
Yeah, right. Nope. I think you were right on that too.
And I mean, I love Nick Offerman. I love Amy Poehler. It's sort of like it, when I think back, it's like, how did you not just stick with it? How did you not just trust it?
Mm-hmm.
But you've seen shows where good people are stuck in a bad thing, and you kind of go, "Yeah, I don't know that it'll work."
Yeah, too many times. I think that's the bottom line for me. Too many times, good people in bad shows, and where the material is not working, it's not compelling, or they can't make that material right be better than it is.
Right.
So there's that. So yeah, but that's why I bring this up. That's why. You know, You're the Worst is to me sort of the, it's the dictionary of, just like I'm in there. I'm the poster boy of that show, like giving up on it, not liking, come back and loving it. And then you and I both and many people have the same similar experience with Parks and Rec, where the first five or six episodes were really kind of unwatchable. And then the second season, all of a sudden it comes like fully baked and it's great. So,
yeah. I mean,
Seinfeld. Yeah, there's a lot of ones that had slow and difficult starts.
Well, and it's been really interesting going back and watching some of these things with my kids, because like last summer, the 15-year-old discovered Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because he discovered Nick Offerman, just independently.
Right, right.
And now full disclosure, my partner in theater was a graduate school classmate of Nick Offerman. So there's sort of that, oh, wow, we kind of were like 2 degrees from Nick Offerman.
Right, right.
And so he watched an episode and then he said, I want to see this. Where should I start? And I just said, beginning of season two. And he
right.
has never seen season one. But we watched the entire run of the series from that point in a single week. And it holds up and it works. You can totally do it in a single week. It's great.
Oh, wow.
and then we watched some Seinfeld because he had seen later episodes of Seinfeld and he was like, oh, I like that. And we went back and I hadn't watched the first season and a half, two seasons of that in forever. And I had forgotten just how slow the first year and a half is. Even into the third season, it's very slow. And it's mm-hmm. funny. It's observational. It's still the same sense of humor. It's still the same, you know, obviously the same people writing it, but it's almost like when they realized they could turn it up a little bit, they could speed up, and they could, I mean, basically, the best episodes of Seinfeld are bedroom farce, right? It's all mistaken things that all weave together and come together by the end. And the best episodes, I would put up there with some of the best Frasers and the best Fawlty Towers. And, you know, it is all of these interleaved things, and you don't know how they're going to come together, and they do, instead of just being sort of a loose collection of observations around a theme.
Right.
You know, and so it was interesting to see that develop in, you know, in a binge watch instead of like over years and going, gee, I kind of like this show. I'll watch it a little bit.
Right. Right.
That was the point.
Well, that's good. That's good. I like, you know, I just think there's so much out there. I guess that's my overall point on that little exercise that we went through today. My overall point is like it's hard. It's hard if you're making a show out there and you put your heart and soul into it and it ends up being good. Because, you know, I really think that the Girlfriend Experience is a pretty great show, but I can't get anybody to watch it. Sometimes I just don't have stars.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to sell it to them by like it's about the world's oldest profession and there's lots of sex and nudity, which you should like, you know, it's like if you're bored you can watch that because it's a bit there's bigger elements to it. But a lot of people just don't want to start that. They don't want to start it. You know, I could like hardly sell anybody on Taboo. They'd say, "What is it about?" And I'd start to tell them, I'm like, "No, oh no, you don't."
it is a little. It's an acquired taste.
Oh, yeah. When you get to the East Indian Trading Company part of this telling them the story, they're like, oh, no, no, not doing that. Sorry.
Do I need to have Wikipedia open the whole time?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Well, I'll throw a question at you. Sort of the inverse. So being a TV critic, you're paid to watch stuff. You have to watch a whole bunch of things just because of the job. What are one or two shows that you are watching that you don't have to, or that you keep watching when you know you should be busy watching something else?
Well, that's a good one. Cause I also teach a class. And so I end up watching sometimes the same series over and over again. Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, I'm watching Legion every time it comes out. I watch Game of Thrones no matter what. I mean, I could obviously fall behind on that and it would be no great shakes. I could catch up with it because all the, you know, no one's reviewing it now, it's essentially this far in. I think there's probably a handful of ones that I do watch for pleasure. I think a lot of times going back to where I feel like I don't have to do it for my job, but I want to keep abreast of what's going on are the network sitcoms. I always feel like every time I come back to Brooklyn Nine-Nine when I've been out for a couple weeks, I'm always like, wow, I should watch this when it comes out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, well, I think I'll do like a two or three quick Bob's Burgers because I have the time. And then I'm like, wow, this should be on my list like of current stuff. It just you know, it just tells you the level of how much stuff's out there. But I'll tell you one thing, the one show I never miss, and I will put deadline reviewing behind it. Like I have to watch this before I watch these three out. It's like it's coming up on, you know, this thing's not going to end till 11 if I start watching it now, and then I've got 3 hours of shows to watch it before I write my review the next morning. That level of dedication is reserved for only one thing, and that's my Golden State Warriors.
Ah, well, there you go.
Well, I never miss a game. I always record it and start it late and watch it over dinner. And sometimes if I have to pause it, I'll pause it. I'll watch to the end when the kids are in bed or whatever. So it's yeah, that's the thing. That's my favorite, and it was last year's favorite show as well. It had a terrible ending last year. Spoiler, but I think it's going to be a little different this year. But yeah, that's I never miss that.
Oh yeah. Well, speaking of live sporting events, the one I never miss every year, This year we watched The Westminster Dog Show, which anyone who knows me online is probably like, wait, you're a cat person. What the hell? But when we moved, when I was a child, we moved up to the New York area, and the cable system had the Madison Square Garden Network when that was just like this rinky-dink little thing, mm-hmm. right? And so they would run MSG events. They would run reruns of The Avengers, the British spy show, not the comics. That was so like every night at midnight, I would be watching The Avengers on that. And every February, they ran the Westminster Dog Show, and then USA Network picked it up, and now Fox Sports One has taken over. They did a good job. It was not quite the same, and it shouldn't be quite the same. But the only thing that was really weird was they kept throwing it to, hey, the stars of the Mick are getting ready for the Daytona 500. Let's see. And they would have just little comedy bits promoting the Daytona 500 in the midst of the dog show. And I'm thinking, first of all, I don't think the people watching this are even watching the Mick, let alone the Daytona 500. But, some of the things they did were nice touches. I was kind of waiting for a robot dog to come in with like futuristic music for every commercial bumper because I've seen too much mm-hmm. football on Fox.
Right.
But thank God they didn't have the robot dog. But you know, it was a good show. The other live event this week that I watched was more of a train wreck. You can probably guess what that was.
Trump.
Yes! I'll give you one guess, and it rhymes with hump.
Yeah, that one is, I think that'll, I mean, watching the summation of all the late night hosts and everybody sort of take it down was great. I mean, other than Fallon, who can't do it. but even though he tried. It's kind of, I think it would be funnier if it wasn't so scary and tragic. Yeah. If he didn't actually have access to the nukes, that might be a little funnier. But it was startling. I think it was it was kind of mind blowing to like watch it and think, wait, what the hell? What is happening?
Well, if you're anyone who works with words and treasures coherent sentences, it was like nails on a chalkboard, right?
Yeah.
The thing that's kind of interesting to me about it, forget the politics. Forget the politics. Forget any of that. I think back to that story during the campaign where people were mocking him for this. And this, you know, this got a lot of attention that, you know, he was on like Face the Nation or Meet the Press. And then he immediately watched a replay of it with the sound off. And that's what he was focused on. And people were like, oh, he's a narcissist or, oh, you know, whatever. And I was thinking, no, he's focusing on the visual because he knows that most of the time people are not listening or they're, you know, when you have TVs in all the airports and all the restaurants and all the bars where they don't have the sound on, as long as it looks good, who cares? Right.
Right.
And if you watch this week's press conference with the sound off, he looks presidential for almost the whole thing. He looks, you know, supremely in control, calm, mellow, smiling. And if you listen to it, Jake Tapper is not kidding when they came back to him and he goes, that was unhinged. It's like, it was. It really was.
It was unhinged. It was the perfect description of it. And, I think the only – I mean, what I took from that, I mean, you're looking at – you have to look at it like – I have to look at it as like a citizen, and it's scary. Right. And, you know, I look at it through the lens of, you know, obviously loathing him. And it's kind of shocking. But then you have to, like, when you try to put it in, like, perspective, it's really immediately clear that, like, we've never seen this before in modern time. I mean, well, you go back, it certainly gets actually easier in modern times or non-modern times to go back and say, yeah, there was a level of decorum that was upheld. Right. But in our times, you don't see anything like that. Like, that is not presidential, and it's just tearing down everything that we kind of had thought, even if we didn't like whoever was ever president at the time, even if they did something that seemed too modern or non-presidential, like when the first time I saw, like when the candidates were going on Arsenio and, you know, and Clinton was not president yet and he was playing saxophone. And I was like, this is a new realm of presidential politics. But this, what happened the other day was just, it's off the charts. I mean, it's
beyond.
Yeah, it's beyond. That's the only best way to put it. So I think I think it's going to be hard for people to continue to make funny stuff because how can you top that? I mean, it's so nutty that you almost can't spoof it because it seems like he's spoofing himself.
It's like McSweeney's internet tendency printed one of his speeches verbatim as a humor piece and credited him, you know?
Yeah. We're at that level, I think. But yeah, there's probably more of that coming. I do like the fact that Colbert's getting a bump.
Yes.
I think just transitioning this back to TV a little bit, I'm really happy that Seth Meyers is kind of also in his element. I would say if people have not discovered Seth Meyers or have not watched him, or if it's just too late, for a lot of people it is too late, just, you know, find the clips online and watch at what a great job he's doing. It's pretty.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
Just search Seth Meyers, A Closer Look.
Yeah,
and that's all you need.
That's smart. Yeah, that's the way to do it. Because we put so much emphasis on Samantha Bee and
John Oliver
and everybody who's done this for so long. But it's nice to see. You know, Colbert can do it. We know he can do it. It's just good to see him finally like taking the. You know, he's taking he's not doing the half step anymore.
Right.
You know, he's fully in. And,
as he might say, he has found his enormous brass balls.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which was, I think, was hard for him with CBS because that's a conservative company. And that audience is probably more in the Trump camp for their primetime lineup than anything else. So you have to kind of run that by the brass, speaking of brass, and say, you know, can I do this? And I think they just said, yeah, just be you. Because they're smart. They're businessmen. They know it's a whole different audience in late night. But it's good to see Seth Meyers get some attention. So all in all, scary times. And hopefully they just stay funny rather than scarier.
Yes.
But what do we have from letters from anybody? Anybody?
Well, yeah, we got a couple of one of the things, if you're a member of the Incomparable Network, you can now join the Incomparable members Slack channels, and we'll set you up with an account in there. You can go in there, you can talk with all the other members, you can talk with a bunch of the hosts. We all go and play in there. And then we have different separate channels within there for, you know, general things and then for various shows. And you can go into the TVTM channel and ask questions directly, and we will get them and we will answer them.
Ooh.
Isn't that that's you know, Jason's kind of smart sometimes.
He's clever.
All the time. But, you know. And so we have a couple of questions from there. So we have, let's see, Moises from the 512. I wonder who that could be.
Yes, I can smell the barbecue from here.
He would love to hear what, if anything, you two have seen said about the young Pope by people who have now actually watched the whole damn excellent thing. I'm not quite sure if he's asking what we thought of it or what we've heard other people think of it.
I think that's what he's getting at. I think he's right. And I would say the short answer is not enough. I think that the review that I wrote was like, God, it's not the internet meme that it's being made out to be. It's trying at other, you know, it's trying at whether, you know, you can debate whether it got to all those. I think Moises really liked where it got. I think that's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't heard or haven't seen links. Maybe I've just missed them because there's so many Trump things being tweeted out in my feed. But now, and now music, since I'm so much music stuff going on. But I just haven't seen like what he's getting at, which is like, did anybody come back to circle back to this thing after they watched the whole thing and say, okay, hey, we were wrong about the presumptions of it being like this just meme. He's the young Pope, blah, blah, blah. Nothing to do with the real series.
Right.
And was there like sort of a more intellectual examination of it? I would say there's if there has been, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's true.
I will certainly go looking for it.
Yeah, now that you've parsed it that way, I can't think of one that I've seen. So, but it's worth looking.
And it could be, just to tie back to, you know, some things that I was talking to Jason about, and what I've kind of tried to make a goal for 2017 for me and my job is to focus some more on endings rather than beginnings, because I think, you know, I'm going to try to get that across to the powers that be for me and my work, is that, you know, there's so much, we review so much stuff, and then to the nature of the job, we're just on, you know, we're on treadmills that are flying by. And so we're just new. I want to know what's going on with the end of these things. And then, you know, have some time to think about them and discuss them. So maybe we'll get one from me soon, because I don't think it's too late to get back on the Young Pope.
Oh, not at all. I mean, that's the thing that always, I mean, I've watched TV like a TV critic over the years, you know, and if I weren't interested in writing, or that came out wrong, if I weren't interested in writing fiction, that would be something I might have wanted to go into. And the focus on, you know, it's always the first episode or the first two episodes. And I always think, well, the second episode is just a rehash of the pilot because you're still exploring. And I want to see that review of the eighth episode. Is it consistent? Is it still, you know, and if it's something that is closed ended, does it end well? I mean, anyone can do a great opening. Look at how many Bond films have great openings and then the movie starts. Right.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I like the idea of looping back and checking out the endings.
Yeah. And I'm going to do more of that.
Okay.
By the way, I just noticed, by the way, just a breaking news that Planet Earth 2, my TV review, is now up.
Excellent.
We'll link it to the show notes.
Excellent. Okay. So we have two questions from Brando in the 301.
Ooh. Okay.
The first one is, do you think the desire to appeal to overseas markets is affecting TV production? That's a good question.
I don't know. I mean, The Young Pope is a co-production. Most of the BBC stuff is co-productions. I wonder if that question has sort of got its genesis with Netflix, because they're definitely more interested in that.
Right.
I don't know. I don't really have a hot take on that. That's like something I maybe have to think about some more. But
okay. Yeah, we can come back to that some other time.
Yeah,
that's a good one to ponder. His other question is, does this mean you're hosting this week, David? Yes. Yes, it does.
Well, that's an easy question. I got that one.
We have one from Steve V in the 541.
Okay.
And this calls for my Seinfeld impression. What's the deal with all the broadcast network time travel shows? He's right. It's more than a trend. I mean, it's kind of getting a little oppressive how many time travel shows there are this year.
Well, I say this, you know, every 3 or 4 years, because we'll have it. We'll be at the press tour and we'll think, okay, so when strip season began, did all these strips pass? And somebody say, hey, we don't have the time travel one. Let's get one of those. I mean, how fast were people able to knock these things out? You know, it's, there are some years where it's like everybody, something is in the water. Everybody has the same thing going. And, this was the year of time travel. I don't think we're going to see that next year though.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, I will admit to watching Timeless. I can't say it's good.
Fun now, right?
It's fun. It's, I actually called it dumb fun the other day in Slack, and one of the other hosts corrected me. It's like, it's not dumb. And I went, well, it's dopey. It's dopey. You know, I find it awfully convenient that every episode is going to a famous moment in history.
Right.
It reminds me of this show that was on in the early 80s called Voyagers, where it was like a time traveler and a little boy. And every episode they went to like two or three famous things in history. And it's like, oh, this is silly. But the characters are interesting. It's comfort food. I don't feel like I miss anything if I don't watch it.
Right.
So, you know, I like time travel. Sue me. So here we have two.
Sue me. Okay.
Two quick ones from the plus 34, which would be Spain. So we're getting the international there. These are from CJ Navas. I'll ask his second one first because we've already answered it. What do you think of Legion so far?
Oh yeah.
So there, you know, go wind back if you weren't paying attention. Wind back.
Or in short, start watching it immediately.
Yes. Yes. And his other one. Now this is interesting because Apple has announced they're kind of beginning to do TV shows, and they've introduced something called Planet of the Apps, which is a reality show about developing apps. So the question is, what kind of show would you like to see Apple try to do?
The first answer I would be not that one. That would be my first answer. Not that show. Which, yeah. It's like, sounds like Shark Tank to me.
I'm waiting for Conquest of the Planet of the Apps myself.
I actually think that unless they're going to get into it as like a huge push, I want to say it's like a conglomerate, basically, as their own powerful entity, I don't think they should get into it at all.
Right.
So, you know, this little bit, I'm struggling because I haven't thought too much about it to make an apt comparison, but it was like, instead of like dreaming up the iPod for like what's going on in the music world, they're like, hey, you know, here's an interesting thin head, you know, headphone. It's like no, think bigger, be bigger. So, you know, right. Don't, you know, give us cutting edge design. Give us technology that takes leaps and bounds. Don't say, oh, you know, we just, you know, we put an extra rubber part on the ear and it makes it more comfortable. This is what that show is. That show is like, okay, well, there's a billion of those shows around. Be original. Right. So if you can't do that, don't be in the business. And honestly, I would rather, and it could be that they just don't have the people for it. And again, they shouldn't be involved in it if they're not. But I would have rather seen them come into it like a Netflix that says, we have X amount of money for original content. We're going to spend 2 or 3 years ramping it up. We're going to hire the best people to do the best work, and we're going to deliver to you these amazing dramas or comedies. But every single week on this show, almost every review I do, I mention it. We don't need any more TV shows. That's the bottom line.
Right.
So I don't know why they're involved in it. I would rather them make me a new TV set. How about that? Go do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. If you're not going to do it for real, don't do it. And if you are going to do it for real, do it well.
Right.
You know, I mean, I I've said this before. I have a great idea for them that would be theatrically based and would help save the world of theater too, because they've got the money to do that. They can, you know, CBS isn't going to do that. But I have a notebook here of TV show ideas, and some of them are cheesy and some of them I think are good. And, Eddie Q, Tim Cook, call me. I'm here. It's okay. You know, do something that not everybody else is doing. You know, maybe do a drama show, but do a drama show that no one else is doing. And I think that's where even the things I don't like on Netflix are at least doing something that you can't see anywhere else.
Yep.
You know, do that. Same thing with Amazon. Where else am I going to see a show about Zelda Fitzgerald? That's kind of an interesting story. I want to see where that goes.
Mm-hmm. Although, if we were to go back to our original thing, that Zelda Fitzgerald thing is a non-starter for me. I'm happy that someone's doing
it. Right.
And that you're like, I want to see that because you got the background for it. But for me, I was like, eh.
I'd like to see a different group do it. But
okay. Well, there's that. Yeah. But yeah.
But the idea.
Exactly. I'm with you on the idea. I just don't know why they're doing it, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I think is smart at Amazon, they seem to be adapting books, right? That's not the only book adaptation they're doing as a series. And, you know, with their relationship to books, that kind of makes sense to me. And there are a lot of interesting things they could be doing. Maybe that's not the one. I don't know. I know people who like it. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Well, let's. Hey, they're both entities are light years ahead of the in the game than Apple is. So,
yes.
I mean, if you're just going to stick your pinky finger into it, I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, if any company has money to burn, they do.
Right.
You know
exactly.
So yeah, guys, give me a call. I'm right here. I'm not doing anything. Speaking of which. I think that's about all we've got, unless there are any last business matters you've got.
No, and I'm not going to surprise you at the end with something, and I will not do that to you. Well, I will not leap from the shadows.
It turns out we got married 30 years before anyone else in the show existed, and then I died. So, all right. Well, if you want to reach us online, you can find Tim on Twitter at Bastard Machine, and you can find the show at TVTM. You can find us on Facebook. You can join the Incomparable Members Network and join the Slack and come and chat with everybody on Slack because it's fun. And you can find Jason at JSnell on Twitter, and you can find me at DLore. And you can read Tim at thehollywoodreporter.com. I think that's all the boilerplate.
I think we got it.
I think we got it. So, thank you for joining me once again, and we'll see you next week.